This is Jay Sekulow. We have breaking news. High-stake talks going on right now between the United States and Russia.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow.
What will tell you that President Putin is serious about trying to find a negotiated solution?
Well, one thing is this. If we're actually going to make progress in these talks, we're going to listen to their concerns, they'll listen to our concerns, and we'll see if there are grounds for progress.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
To make actual progress, it's very hard to see that happening when there's an ongoing escalation, when Russia has a gun to the head of Ukraine with 100,000 troops near its borders, the possibility of doubling that on very short order.
And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the broadcast. We'll be taking your calls at 800-684-3110. And there is a major development, and that is the escalating tension between Russia and its neighbors and Russia and the United States. And I say that because on Ukraine's border, there are over 100,000 troops. There are bilateral talks going on right now today dealing with this very issue. In the United States, President Biden had a conversation with Vladimir Putin last week, where the readout, so to speak, is what it's called, was said it did not go well. The United States is talking about significant sanctions. Vladimir Putin's response to that is, if there's a new round of sanctions, then we will, in fact, have a breach in our relationship. The irony of all of this is we'd remove the sanctions from the Nord Stream gas line that's coming out of Russia, which will serve most of Europe. That we allowed with no sanctions, while President Biden decided that taking the pipelines here in the United States, he'd shut that one down, and he did. So, I mean, it's inconsistent, but the problem is that you now have a tinderbox literally going on in Russia, in the region, as we speak. I want to go to Andy for this for a moment here. Andy, I think this Ukraine situation obviously is tense, but there is a unique history here, and I think it would be good to kind of explain the history of Ukraine and Russia.
Well, I think we have to understand that Ukraine was, at least this is the contention that we're going to hear from Putin and from the people who advocate the reassumption of the Ukraine into Greater Russia. It was the heart of the Russian Empire. Prince Vladimir in the 10th century, specifically in the year 988, had his people baptized and accepted Christianity from their pagan faith in the caves of Kiev in the Ukraine. He sent out embassies to Rome and to Constantinople to determine which form of Christianity he wanted his people to take. And remember, his center of his empire was in Kiev, in what is now and what was then what we call the Ukraine. He went to Rome, and the Romans put on a great elaborate mass for them, and he went to Constantinople, and the Orthodox put on an elaborate liturgy, and when the embassies came back, he said, "Which form of Christianity do you recommend?" And the ambassador said, "The Romans were very beautiful, very nice. They fed us well. They had a beautiful mass. But when we were in Constantinople and we went to the Church of Saint Sophia, we knew not whether we were in heaven or on earth." He said, "Well, that's all I need to hear." And the two apostles, Cyril and Methodius, set out from Constantinople and baptized Prince Vladimir and the Rus in Kiev in the Ukraine. So for Putin, that is the heartland of Mother Russia.
But it is an independent country, Wes.
Right.
Independent nation.
And yet, you know, Putin made the statement recently, repeated it from a previous year, the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century was the fall of the Soviet Union. His goal is to try and restore some of the greatness that he perceived back then. So his motive is, I can go back and be the strong man, restore the old Soviet-era kind of empire for Russia, and I think that's part of his goal.
All right, we're going to get into this. By the way, we have Rick Grinnell today and Mike Pompeo to discuss this, our senior advisor for international policy and our senior counsel for global affairs. So we've got a lot to talk about on this. Well, also, when we come back from the break, I'll give you an update on the Supreme Court inaction and what that means. We'll do a real quick up and down on that because we don't have an opinion in the case involving the mandates. We'll take calls as well, Logan, and comments.
That's right. Phone lines are open right now. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 to get your voice heard on the air. We do have phone lines open. If you're watching on social media, make sure you like this, share it, comment. We'll get to some of those as well. Again, and check out ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Secular, we will be taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 if you want your voice heard on the air today. We'll get to some of those later on.
So we've got a conflict between Russia and its neighbors and Russia and the United States. High-level talks going on in Russia right now. Let me briefly report on what on this argument on Friday. We gave you a live analysis of the Supreme Court argument on the Biden health care, the vaccine mandate. No decision has come down from the Supreme Court. No stay has yet to be issued, which means portions of the law went into effect today. The mask requirement, if you're unvaccinated, if you're vaccinated, the requirement that you provide evidence of your vaccine to your employer. The testing mandate, which for unvaccinated employees, which was a big part of this also, was moved by the Solicitor General till February. And so that doesn't go into effect till February. Logan was saying, how could they do that? But I remember you asked that during the...
Yeah, they could just, you know, pivot and make an adjustment live during the hearing. Was pretty interesting. The whole hearing is pretty interesting to see actually how much that they would give.
Yeah.
When they even said, what do you think, there should be a stay? And they're like, well, maybe there should be a stay. It was almost an interesting mind game, if you will, to play with them.
Well, they are a lot, you know, the Solicitor General binds the agency. So when the agency moved that back that portion of the testing, it binds the agency. That's just the way the law is. All right, we're going to get right back into this. I want to go to Than Bennett in Washington because, Than, you've got Wendy Sherman, who was, of course, one of the principal negotiators for the Iran nuclear deal, who's leading the negotiations for the United States with Russia right now. What's your expectations there?
Yeah, you know, Jay, I actually think this is where the conversation needs to start when you're talking about diplomacy from the United States in, because Wendy Sherman is not a stranger to any of us. You mentioned a second ago that she was the lead negotiator in the infamous Iran deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. So Jay, we know what we're going to get from her. She's been involved in these high-stakes negotiations before. My concern, and the concern that I'm hearing from many on Capitol Hill, is that when you send the same people with the same strategy, you're going to get the same result. And obviously, we know what happened with the Iran negotiations and the deal that came out of that. But Jay, this is someone who is a hard left activist. It's just the bottom line truth. Before she came into government service, she was a director of Emily's List, which, as our listeners know, is a very pro-abortion activist group here in Washington, D.C. So I think the concern is, even if you have, you know, maybe room for differences of opinion on how these negotiations should look, Jay, I think leading with Wendy Sherman is a cause for concern. Those meetings started last night. They're continuing today. But I think it's probably the worst way to put a strong foot forward.
You You know, there's this whole discussion about Ukraine, and it was, as Andy said, historically was part of Russia, and then that separate. But Harry, it is a separate nation state.
It is, but it's not necessarily a separate nation state in the mind of Vladimir Putin, and I think that matters. Russian President Vladimir Putin has declared that the liberal idea has outlived its purpose. He supports this claim by noting that the public has rejected liberal European policy stances on immigration, open borders, and multiculturalism. So when we come to this issue, we should note first and foremost that Putin is a man of principle, and that the United States is led by unprincipled cosmopolitans who are prepared to make the same old arguments that have failed before with respect to Ukraine. And I doubt seriously whether or not their arguments can be seen as convincing in the mind of the Russian government or the Russian people.
People are asking, though, so they're having these negotiations, these issues. Ukraine may be invaded. What difference does it make to the United States? I know that's on a lot of people's mind.
Yeah, well, it changes the world order a lot, as well as international boundaries. But, you know, perceptions are important. And Vladimir Putin perceives the United States as weak and divided, and certainly our president that way. He regrets deeply. As a matter of fact, on December the 23rd, he made a speech in which he said he regrets deeply what he called the disintegration of historical Russia. He is determined to build back some of that glory, and his modus operandi is to use the excuse that somehow he is rescuing people and restoring order. And we have sent mixed messages, mixed signals over the years. He invaded Georgia 2008 with no, you know, recriminations from us. Crimea 2014. We have removed sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. So he thinks he can get away with this. His desire is to cut the influence of the United States, to curb NATO, and to try and rebuild some of the esteem of historical Russia.
I do not believe, now maybe I'm wrong here, but I do not believe that even this administration is going to curb NATO.
No. NATO is strong. It's vital to the stability and peace of Europe and the United States. That's why whenever Putin has tried to demand that we not enlarge NATO, that Ukraine can never be considered for membership, he even said he wanted to tell us which troops we can place in our own NATO countries and which weapons. The United States and the Secretary General of NATO said those are non-starters. But we will not negotiate from that point.
Jake Tapper had on Anthony Blinken, our Secretary of State. Take a listen to what he had to say.
So you say the U.S. will respond with massive consequences to any Russian aggression in Ukraine. President Biden has ruled out U.S. unilateral troops on the ground. What sanctions is the U.S. willing to impose? And are U.S. troops as part of a NATO or international force on the table?
Well, first, when it comes to consequences, it's not just us who's been saying this. The G7, the leading democratic economies in the world, made clear there'd be massive consequences for renewed Russian aggression. So has the European Union. So has NATO. And we've been working very closely with all of these countries in recent weeks to elaborate those, to come to agreement on the steps that we would take together in the event of renewed Russian aggression.
The event of renewed Russian aggression, there is renewed Russian aggression right now. This isn't in the face of possible renewed Russian aggression. The Russians have amassed on the border with Ukraine over 100,000 troops, including heavy artillery. So that's happening now. Now, here's the problem. Europe could say all they want, Andy, about, you know, we're really upset with Putin doing this, but they need the natural gas from that pipeline that Russia controls.
That's right, and they're not going to do anything that jeopardizes that. I think the Americans have to realize that we don't always look to our European allies to form our foreign policy. Our foreign policy should be formed, molded, and shaped based upon America first and not upon a European concept. Rick Grenell has said this time and again, and former ambassador to West Germany, don't look to the Europeans as the great supporters and allies that you think that they are, because they're weak reeds and weak feathers that you're relying upon. Look to America. And this is something that I doubt that this president has the fortitude to do. I don't think that Putin would have done what he is doing under the prior administration whatsoever. But he finds solace in the fact that, as Harry Hutchison correctly said, you've got an unprincipled cosmopolitanist as president of the United States. And you don't have a person who takes America first as his predecessor did.
You know, it'd be interesting to get Rick's position on this, because Rick, in addition to being the ambassador to Germany, also served in the United Nations for 10 years and, of course, was the director of national intelligence. Then there's a lot of discussion in Washington about the impact on this, but we've had a pipeline here that was shut down by this administration, and now we're, you know, Europe is depending upon, of course, Putin's pipeline, so you know whatever they do is going to be muted.
Well, to underscore the point that Andy was making, and my guess is that Rick will echo this sentiment as well, I mean, I don't think Russia believes this tough talk, Jay. I mean, and there's reason for them not to. And President Biden can say all he wants that there will be severe consequences and that they're going to start with economic sanctions. Look, I think we've said in the past, Jay, I mean, economic sanctions are a good place to start. They're a proper place to start. But if they don't get the desired action, if the target of those sanctions does not come into compliance, you have to be willing to take a tougher stand. Now, clearly, the economic sanctions that have been on and off in different places have had an impact on the Russian economy. But, Jay, they have not gotten the desired result in this conflict with Ukraine. And I think if you ask Vladimir Putin, do you believe that President Biden will lead the world, will lead the G7 in taking a more strenuous action should you continue to ignore it? I think he would say absolutely not.
Of course not. I mean, I think that I'm not saying that that's maybe the president will and surprise us and will. I don't know what that means, though. That's the problem. What does that actually look like? Because as you said, Wes, this affects the entire world order. People in the United States, you need to worry about this. If Russia's in an aggressive mode, that's not good for the country, for our country.
Yeah, it destabilizes the world, you know, and he will come in and use whatever, you know, opportunity he has to disrupt things and to recreate, you know, Russian power. This is a very volatile time in Europe.
We have Rick Rennell is going to be joining us next, our senior advisor on international affairs and national security. So he will be advising us next. Very interesting. He is the one who said consensus negotiations like this, consensus approach to governance is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, we have a lot of people watching right now. So if you don't mind sharing it, we appreciate it if you're watching on social media. We have a lot of people listening, obviously, through the radio. If you have a question or comment, I know this is kind of a big topic. A lot of people are wondering why they should care. We're kind of breaking that down for you. A lot of people are watching, I think, to get informed. But if you do have a question or a comment to make, you'd like to make it to our host on the air, give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. It's 1-800-684-3110. We'll be taking your phone calls in just a minute. Also, check out the great work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Available also all of our video content, our daily blogs, great content from people like the panel you hear today, Mike Pompeo, Rick Grinnell, all on our website, aclj.org. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Secula, we are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We have, obviously, on the show right now, coming in live, Rick Grinnell is joining us right now.
Yeah, Rick, I think one of the, obviously, we've got the situation, the negotiations going on between Wendy Sherman on the United States side and then the Deputy Foreign Minister for Russia over the situation in Ukraine and some of the other areas in that region. Now, one of the questions that is being asked, and I think this is one that we all want to know the answer to, is what happens over there? Why should Americans care? I mean, because there are people are saying, well, you know, this is their regional problem. This isn't a U.S. problem. How do you answer that?
Look, I think that that's a fair point, right? We certainly don't want to be dragged into wars. The America First idea is to say, what is our interest? How are Americans impacted by these decisions? And I think that the reality is that this is in Europe's neighborhood. But unfortunately, we've been pushed into this corner where we have really bad choices. And that's one of the things that I think Donald Trump gave us with an America First agenda, which was the ability to not get put into the corner where Russia is on the border of a European country. We've already seen what they've done with Crimea because and look, this goes back, Jay, to the fact that there wasn't a credible threat of military action from the Biden team. There was a credible threat from Trump. And so you have to ask yourself, why is it that North Korea and China and Russia begin to test the Biden administration in ways they never tested Trump? And the answer goes to the fact of what world leaders have said to me personally, which is, quote, we just always didn't know what Donald Trump was going to do, so we had to wait.
You know,
and that in lies the credible threat of military action.
One of the issues that comes up, and I'm going to play this sound, is Vladimir Putin trying to reestablish basically a Soviet Union? Take a listen. This is Jake Tapper interviewing the Secretary of State.
Former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta said a few years ago that what he believes drives Putin is a desire to restore the old Soviet Union. Do you agree?
I think that's right. I think that's one of President Putin's objectives, and it is to re-exert a sphere of influence over countries that previously were part of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And as we've said, that's unacceptable. We can't go back to a world of spheres of influence. That was a recipe for instability, a recipe for conflict, a recipe that led to world wars.
And Rick, so that sounds tough. I mean, it sounds like we're not going to allow this. We don't want this to happen. Meanwhile, President Biden shuts down the pipeline here, removes the sanctions on the Russians for the pipeline there, and then we're trying to talk tough at the same time, and it doesn't work.
Look, talking tough after a series of weak decisions is ridiculous. I mean, here Blinken is talking tough when he's been put in the corner, but what has he been doing over the last 9 months? He hasn't been talking tough. He's been acting weak. And that's the whole problem that I have when people say in very real and right way, which is, why is this current crisis in Ukraine our problem? It's our problem because the United States has allowed themselves over the last year to have Russia bully into Europe because we've been ignoring the issue, just like Obama did around Ukraine, just like Obama did around Syria, right? When you show weakness, don't be surprised that you're in a corner having to choose between two bad decisions. And that's why I think we get charged up, we get angry because of the slippery slope, Jay, because what does this mean next year? Where are we showing such weakness that our enemies are organizing and others are organizing against us so that next year we're going to find ourselves into a world crisis mess all because right now we're acting weak? And let me just finish by saying this. Here's an act of weakness that we're doing right now. sending Wendy Sherman in to negotiate. I mean, come on. How many times do we have to learn that she's a terrible negotiator? She negotiated with the North Koreans and got outmaneuvered. They took the food aid that she offered and didn't do a single thing that she said that they were going to do. Then she was the lead on Syria. She was the lead on Crimea with Russia. I mean, every single time we put her in an Iran negotiation, she is the weakest negotiator possible. She cares too much what the other side thinks of her. And so the idea that Wendy Sherman is the tip of the spear for us, I fear that we are sending another message of weakness.
To me, it's shocking. It's like Obama 2.0. It's like they got promoted in this administration, and it makes it worse. But this is part of the problem. These are the people that are doing negotiation. Colonel Smith has a question for you, Rick.
Yeah, you know, I'm not optimistic, Rick, that the outcome of these talks that begin in Geneva are going to have a good outcome. But, you know, Putin has presented a draft agreement. And in that, he says we can't have any NATO troops in any country previous to what we had in 1997. And that basically he's going to direct NATO deployments. I think he knows that is a non-starter and that he really is not sincere. He's probably using this as a pretext to say, I will go ahead and invade Ukraine anyway. How serious do you think this Russian blueprint is? And is it simply a pretext for invasion?
Yeah, look, this is another frustration because we've allowed ourselves to get in the situation where it's a bad decision and a worse decision. And now we have to decide and give, you know, foreign policy critics have to give their opinion on these two issues. And the reality is I have to start the answer by saying I never would have allowed us to be in this position over the last 9 months. I wouldn't have given Russia all the weak signs and the pipeline. And so, you know, it's infuriating that we're in this position of two terrible decisions. But let me just answer the question, and that I think Russia and Putin are very real about jamming us because they believe that Biden is weak. So I do believe an invasion is a very real possibility. I believe that their alternative or ultimatum that we have to choose between backing down or fighting with them because we're too close to former Soviet states and that they want to have their glory days back. I think that's really real. But again, we shouldn't have to be in the position of negotiating at NATO to back down because Putin is saying, I'm going to start a war if you continue this march. I don't want to stick Russia in the eye. I don't think that NATO needs to be doing that, but NATO exists to make sure that Russia doesn't rise. And we need to be able to make tough decisions on the climb so that when we get to the top, we're not faced with two terrible decisions like we are today.
All right, this is just out just now, and this is coming from the New York Times. It says, quote, after nearly 8 hours of intense talks, the U.S. pushed back on demands it said were non-starters, while Russia said there was no reason to fear an escalation of tensions with Ukraine. And then Russian officials said that they told their American counterparts that they had no plans to invade Ukraine in a series of talks that lasted nearly 8 hours. There's no reason to fear some kind of escalatory scenario.
So look the other way. Don't look here. Just look away.
Exactly.
Look away. We're fine. We're fine.
Yeah. And they'll say this is the problem is they'll say this is a success. Rick, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. All right. We're here for another 30 minutes. It's great to have analysis by people like Rick Grinnell, part of our team, could really give you the inside of what's going on here. But like he said, yeah, look the other way and it's going to go away. It doesn't. All right. Back with more.
Yeah, we'll be right back with more. Another half hour of Seculo Live you're watching right now. Stay tuned. If you're on a radio station that doesn't carry, make sure you log on and watch us on Facebook, YouTube, on ACLJ.org.
Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is going to join us in the next half hour of this broadcast. Because here's Sport of the ACLJ. We have these experts as part of our team.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now, more than ever, this is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
So there's high-level talks going on between Russia and the United States right now. Russian officials saying, don't worry, we're not going to invade Ukraine. Meanwhile, they've got 100,000 troops and heavy armaments on the border. If you're just joining us, we had Rick Grenell on. He's saying they're basically saying to the United States, we'll just look the other way. We're going to be joined in the last segment of the broadcast by former Secretary of State, now our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, Mike Pompeo, to discuss this. All of this is happening simultaneously. There was one question that I had, because obviously you worry about instability. And the question is, if in fact Russia were to invade Ukraine and China were to invade Taiwan, what is the impact economically? You know, those, I threw a different one in there, scenario, than what we talked about during the break, because you add the China Taiwan situation to it, and you, and it may change the equation. But what do you think, from a law and economics perspective as a professor, the impact of that would be?
Well, first, I think if Russia invades Ukraine, that invasion will be over within 24 to 72 hours. That's number one. Number two, I think Europe will continue pretty much as normal, because they will continue to get their natural gas supply. But I also think that if China invades Taiwan, this could have a ripple effect throughout the economy, because it could affect, for instance, access to chips and semiconductors, and those things may have a long-term adverse impact on the U.S. economy. So I think the second invasion would be more important in terms of disrupting economics.
Wes, you've seen, Colonel Smith, you've seen these statements coming out of the summit, don't worry, we're not going to invade Ukraine. Meanwhile, they got 120,000 or so troops there and heavy armaments. China's threatened Taiwan. They consider it part of China. What's your, I mean, if the Russians were to invade Ukraine, what happens?
Yeah,
they take Ukraine?
Good. Yeah, they would. I think it would be a longer and bloodier fight than when they took Crimea, because we have armed Ukraine with some offensive weapons. But when Russia says, you know, don't worry, we won't do it, you can't really take that check to the bank. You know, Nikita Khrushchev, and I date myself, who was the premier of the Soviet Union, once said, promises are like pie crust. They're made to be broken. And that is part of the Russian geopolitical mentality. So I don't think we can really take their word, you know, that they will not invade Ukraine. I think they will. It will be a long, bloody fight. It will be ugly. At the same time, it will strengthen NATO, and we will build strength with NATO in the countries that border Russia now. But I think, personally, he is going to invade. I think all of this negotiation and talk, I think, is a pretext. I think he intends to invade Ukraine, and I think he thinks he can get away with it.
And, Andy, you were just at our offices in Strasbourg, the European Center for Law and Justice, but the sense is, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the Europeans need that natural gas. They need that gas pipeline, and that's controlled by Russia.
That's right. The Europeans are not going to be our allies against a Russian invasion of Ukraine. They don't care. They're looking at their economic interests, and they're not looking at the interests of the United States. And my fear is that nobody's looking after the interests of the United States, least of all the President of the United States. Again, an unprincipled globalist, a cosmopolitanist who's looking to make sure everybody likes him. That's why I put Wendy Sherman up there as the negotiator, because she wants to be sure that everybody likes her. That's not how you negotiate from that sort of a position. But back to the Ukraine situation, Putin is saying that we're just going back to the status quo, what it was under Peter the Great and Catherine the Great. I don't know that we're trying to reestablish the Soviet Union. We're just trying to reestablish the Tsarist Empire. The reason I say that is because there is a Christian overlay to all this that didn't exist in the Soviet Union. He has the support of the Russian Orthodox Church. He has the support of the people. As Harry Hutchison said, if he takes over the Ukraine, Europe is going to go on as always.
Yeah, I mean, this is the when they say, Logan, that there are, you know, there's all these negative consequences. I mean, you look at it and you wonder to yourself, really? I mean, the problem is it destabilizes the world order. And that's what you got to understand here. And that matters to the United States. Mike Pompeo, former Secretary, is going to join us in the last segment. This segment, we're going to take some of your calls and comments coming up.
That's right. Give us a call right now, 1-800-684-3110. If you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll get to you. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
To Secular, we are taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Should we go ahead and...
Yeah, I just want to say to those that may be joining us just for the second half hour, we're not ignoring what happened at the mandate argument case on Friday. It's just there's no opinion that has been issued. There was an expectation of an administrative stay and then probably opinions today. There was neither administrative stay nor opinions today. So we're going to take phone calls at 800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take a call.
All right, David's calling on line two. He's been on hold for a while. David, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, David.
Hey, thank you very much. Sure. No, I was just, I'm trying to contain myself regarding all I've been hearing about the weakness that we've been showing.
Yep.
But when you were talking about how they took Crimea, and if they take, Ukraine, so why should the Europeans not worry? Maybe they'll want back the Baltic states and Poland and maybe East Germany.
Yeah. You know, look, I mean, the German Republic would be now is one of the strongest economies, certainly the strongest economy in Europe, and is a world-class economy. I don't think that that's where they would go. But do they – look, they send troops in. I mean, Vladimir Putin is showing what he wants to do. He sent troops in last week?
To Kazakhstan,
because they were having instability in the government.
Right, right. And he uses that as his method, you know, of operation, that I'm going in to help promote stability. He's not going in to promote stability, whether it's in Crimea, in eastern Ukraine, or Kazakhstan, or wherever. But that's the reason he uses. His real goal is to diminish U.S. influence, to curb NATO, and to make Europe more dependent on Russian energy, and to, you know, really enlarge the Russian sphere of influence. That is what he is about. And left unchecked, Jay, that's what he will do. The other thing that concerns me also, though, we mentioned Taiwan and the possibility of China invading. Do not put it past our three big adversaries to cooperate strategically so that about the time that we're dealing with Russia and Ukraine, China will invade Taiwan, and Iran will come forth and say they have their first nuclear device. There is the real danger of strategic cooperation between these three countries.
So I'm going to go to Than on this quickly here. And then Than, as far as what Congress is looking at here on any of these, Foreign Affairs Committee, National Security, what are you hearing in Washington right now on these?
Well, I think that you're hearing, first of all, the echoing of concerns you just heard from Wes. You heard it from Rick earlier in the broadcast. In the event of multiple invasions, Jay, I mean, there are no great options. There aren't. We're not suggesting that there are. But in order for you to have any options whatsoever, you have to have a commander-in-chief who the opposing side or the adversary believes would act. I think these committees, Jay, even on the Democrat side, I will say this is not just a Republican thing. I think even on the Democrat side, there is not a belief that this president is willing to take another action. Rick called it no credible threat from the United States, and I think that's true. Russia does not believe that the president will act. And the proof of that, I do think, is Wendy Sherman leading these negotiations. So look, some of these committees, Jay, they might convene hearings, they might take testimony, but look, this ultimately comes down to the commander-in-chief. It's not something that a congressional committee can override.
No. It's the executive branch. And here's what's interesting. This is just released from the New York Times. This, again, there's a readout on the conversation. So this is what Wendy Sherman said, Andy. Today was a discussion, a better understanding of each other and each other's priorities. It was not what we would call a negotiation.
Okay, then what are you doing there? I mean, if we're not negotiating, we're sitting down there just mollycoddling each other and just stroking each other to make each other feel good. That's what Wendy Sherman wants. She wants the other side to like her. She wants everybody to like her. Because that's how she's been trained. She's an elitist, leftist person who's taken the position under Obama and now has been promoted under Biden, you know, into this position. Would you want her negotiating a car deal for you? I wouldn't even want her to buy a car for me, much less negotiating something as basic and fundamental as what our relationship with the Russians are over Ukraine. I think it's an absolute travesty to have her as the negotiator. And when you read that thing from the New York Times and says, we're just basically feeling each other out here to see how we feel, we're not really negotiating, then what in the world are you doing there?
Well, here's what the deputy foreign minister for Russia said. We don't see an understanding from the American side of the necessity of a decision in a way that satisfies us. And what they're talking about when they're saying a decision in the way that satisfies us is a de-escalation, not of Russia and Ukraine, but of NATO. Harry, that's what they're talking about. So when you say, does this involve America? Yeah, because we are the biggest sponsor of NATO, and NATO has helped keep stability in Europe.
Well, I think your analysis is sound. It's also important to keep in mind that the pursuit of a better understanding, which apparently is Wendy Sherman's objective, is not a principled objective, but it is a perfect metaphor for the unprincipled behavior of the Biden administration in Afghanistan, on the U.S. southern border, and throughout the world. We have sent a clear and unmistakable signal to our adversaries. Now is a perfect time to strike against American interest.
All right, you want to take a call?
Yeah, let's take a call. People are calling.
Let's go to John, who's calling California on line one. John, you're on the air.
Hey, John.
Hey, you know, I'm a big believer in strategists and history and chess. And my thing is Biden's track record on any of these issues is in the toilet. But my bigger issue is the fact that, you know, they know what we know. They know if they put troops there, our attention and our energy is going to focus on this issue. But what's China doing? Are they in Afghanistan? Are they moving in to take over the lithium? You know,
yes.
Putin and Russia, they're thick as thieves, okay? They're working together now against America. The more they can kill this nation, take away our freedom, and it's almost like they put Biden in office because he knew he was so incompetent.
Well, I'm not going to get into who put who in office, but I will tell you where I agree with you. You know, don't take your eyes off of China, Wes, for a moment.
Not for one.
Not just
moment.
Because of the possibility that COVID originated intentionally in China, which I believe that the evidence is showing, which has created world havoc. And no Supreme Court decision as of right this moment. But also the fact that China is being very aggressive on what their intent is.
Absolutely. They're aggressive militarily, economically, politically. And it seems that no one is checking China on this. And again, the thing that unites China and Russia, they disagree on many things, but they are united in their desire to diminish United States' influence and capabilities. China is intent on becoming the world's only remaining superpower. Those twin threats are very, very real, very, very large, and you take that and you throw in also Iran and all that's going on there with their nuclear program. We are on the verge of a true international crisis regarding these three countries, and our response to that is key and critical.
You know, I think that we engage in this with danger if we are not very specific as to where this could go. This is an interesting comment from Rochelle on Facebook. What would the Trump administration be doing? Probably not much, because I don't think Russia would be invading Ukraine, possibly, and I don't think the Chinese would be going into Taiwan. Because projecting strength, this was a famous quote of Benjamin Disraeli. He called it diplomacy as war. And they understand power. Strength is power. And that he was talking, by the way, about Russia at the time, and the Baltic region that was under such turmoil. And he said they understand power. Diplomacy can be war, Andy, but you have to have a diplomatic position that has a consequence. And our consequences were we lifted sanctions on the Nord Stream gas line so that the Russians could get gas to Europe while we closed down our own pipeline here, while he closed down our own pipeline here. That's our strategy.
Yeah, good strategy. Let me tell you, diplomacy without the threat of death, without the threat of the exercise of power, is not diplomacy at all. I go back to the fact that I don't think any of Biden's advisors have ever read a history of the Second World War or what led up to it. Who went to Munich to see Hitler? Chamberlain went to Munich to see Hitler. Hitler did not go to London to see Chamberlain. That was a show of weakness. Chamberlain comes back waving a piece of paper, having sold out the Sudetenland and Czechoslovakia, and saying, we now have peace for a time, or in our time, depending on what you think he said when he got off that airplane. Don't they see that you cannot concede to an enemy who is a dictator, who is a totalitarian, and get anything out of it in the end that is good? Don't they read history books? Don't they understand that that's not how you negotiate? You don't go over there to feel him out. Chamberlain goes to Munich to see how Hitler feels, and they sit and have coffee and tea upstairs, and they chit-chat, and he walks away having sold out the Czechs. That's the same thing that you're seeing with Wendy Sherman. That's not negotiation.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's... Well, she said it's not negotiation. She said, it's not what we would call... I'm reading what the readout of this is. She said, today was a discussion, a better understanding of each other and each other's priorities. It was not what we would call a negotiation. So she said it, not a negotiation. Like you said, Andy, then what are we doing there? I mean, it's not a negotiation. They want to impact NATO. That is what the goal is here. And they will go into the Ukraine to try to do that because they know at the end this administration will do nothing. And I'm not advocating, by the way, that we get into some armed conflict. I think that's a mistake too. But there could have been better sanctions. This could have been better thought out. I think it's a failure of foreign policy. Logan, coming up, Mike Pompeo.
Yes, coming up, senior counsel for the ACLJ and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will be joining us. It'll be a fascinating conversation, to say the least. If you want to see some of his great content, some of Rick Grinnell's great content, all the panel you've heard today, go to ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. And we are joined by our Senior Counsel of Global Affairs. And what an appropriate time for that to be, Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State. Mike, thanks for being with us. I want to get your analysis. Wendy Sherman just said in this discussion between Russia and the United States that's going on, this is what she said. Today was a discussion, a better understanding of each other and each other's priorities. It's not what we call a negotiation. And, of course, we rhetorically ask the question, if it's not a negotiation, what is it?
Boy, Jay, it's hard to know. If I assure you that Vladimir Putin is there trying to exercise coercive diplomacy, right? His team. Right. Has gone with a very clear mission, a very clear objective. They know exactly the things that they're prepared to give up in exchange for things that, Putin wants. I hope our team is armed with the same level of specificity, but the discussion that just wanders around the room talking about history or talking about what happened or what they anticipate, I mean, that's already taken place. The leaders have done that. They should have come with a set of clear outlines of what each side was prepared to do in order to achieve an outcome that made sense for their own people. I fear, Jay, that when I hear, and I saw Ms. Sherman talk about de-escalation, it is almost always just like publicly calling for de-escalation that is losing, yeah. That is prepared to cave because they're asking for something that they're almost certainly not going to achieve from Vladimir Putin.
Mike, what do you think the objective of Vladimir Putin is here? I mean, we've got 120,000 troops now, at least reported to be on the border of Ukraine, including heavy armaments. You were in the military. You don't put heavy armaments there. I mean, it could be just a show of force. But what do you think the objective is? Is it the de-escalation he wants, is the de-escalation of NATO, or is there something else?
Yes, he's trying to limit the capacity of NATO to build out democracies on his borders. It's not just here. We've seen this in Georgia and Abkhazia. We saw what happened to Belarus now several months back where he supported the dictator there. We now know the Russians have sent folks into Kazakhstan. This is Vladimir Putin and his vision for recreating of some understanding about his near abroad in the Soviet Union. And he's going to use coercive power, real power, not sitting at a table in Geneva, to demand that the Biden administration and NATO give him precisely what it is he's seeking, more influence in those places. And the ability to influence those economies ultimately to help build out his oligarchy and make Russians safer and more secure at the expense of the West.
And one of the things I'm concerned about, I know Colonel Smith may want has got a question for you too, but one of the things I'm concerned about with this West, and you can talk with the Secretary on this, is, you know, the Ukraine populace has a significant, we don't know what the exact, they were reporting 50% of pro-Russia. I don't know if that's the number, but all of that plays into this.
Yeah, it does. This is complicated, very, very complicated. I'm wondering, Mr. Secretary, you know, what can we bring to the table that will actually deter Putin and stop this potential invasion? Because many people believe that because of his demands concerning NATO, that he knows we're not going to agree with that, and so it's a pretext that he will invade. What are the things we can bring to the table that might get his attention so that he will not invade? And secondly, if he does, and personally I think he will, what should our response be?
So there are so many things we can do that increase his costs, but we've not demonstrated any willingness to do them, right? When he permitted from his soil our pipelines in the southeast of the United States to be shut down, we did nothing. When he now is becoming one of the primary providers of the resilient level natural gas inside of Germany, Nord Stream 2 pipeline, when you see the Democrat Party talking about shrinking the defense budget, those are the things that Vladimir Putin fears, right? We raised the defense budget. We're beginning to re-modernize our nuclear program. We wouldn't give in when he was breaking treaty rules. There are so many things that we can do that make it clear it's just going to be too costly for him. That includes, of course, arming the Ukrainians, giving them the tools that they need to push back and make it expensive to make sure that Russians will have to fight and die if they try to do what they did in Crimea.
those are the things one can do to change the calculus, the math for Vladimir Putin. To date, the administration has not demonstrated their willingness to do that.
I'm going to play a soundbite that we played earlier, and that is a question, I think it was from Jake Tapper, to your successor in Secretary of State, and that is Anthony Blinken, who was asked the question, and coming off of something Leon Panetta said, about Vladimir Putin basically trying to build back a greater Russia. If you would, take a listen to the question and answer, and then I want to ask you a comment on it.
Former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta said a few years ago that what he believes drives Putin is a desire to restore the old Soviet Union. Do you agree?
I think that's right. I think that's one of President Putin's objectives, and it is to re-exert a sphere of influence over countries that previously were part of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And as we've said, that's unacceptable. We can't go back to a world of spheres of influence. That was a recipe for instability, a recipe for conflict, a recipe that led to world wars.
So I want to get your sense of that, Mr. Secretary. Do you agree with Leon Panetta and Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State now, that objective could well be the return to the old-style Soviet Union?
I think that's definitely what I was suggesting when I talked about him trying to re-exert power in these nations that are on the border of Russia. Look, they've got a decreasing population. They are largely resigned to being a country that depends on fossil fuels for nearly all of their GDP. They know they need to continue to exert economic pressure and political control of the countries on their border in order to maintain their grip on power inside of Russia itself. Putin's been pretty clear. The greatest catastrophe of the last century was the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Well, I think he knows he can't put it back where it was. These countries aren't coming back in the same way that they were in the Soviet Union. I think he wants to extend his influence and his capacity because he has deep economic and political interest in achieving that.
Mike, for our listeners here in the United States, we have listeners all over the world, but in the United States, why should Americans care?
Yeah, this is really pretty straightforward. There's the values that America has always tried to help, the human rights issues, making sure that countries get to make decisions for themselves. But there's also a central notion of the rule of law that matters an awful lot to the United States. We don't let nations use military force to cross sovereign boundaries. It's why we care about our southern border, right? This is American sovereignty that we want to protect. And it's important, this idea that each country gets to make decisions for itself, that the Ukrainian people, and you're right, there are many of them that would like to be closer to Russia. Fair enough. That's what they should do through their democratic institutions in Ukraine. They should work that out. We have to make sure that the idea that you can use force, you can use military, you can use power to subject peoples not in your country is stamped out and forever rid from the world. We think of ourselves in the United States as not having to that at any risk, but our friends and allies, our partners, whether that's in Europe or Israel, we know that the idea of nation states being able to make decisions for themselves without military force being used to suppress them is really important to us.
I've got to ask you this. We only got about 30 seconds left, but I need to ask you this. I know you're a tough negotiator, and you served our country so well, continue to. How tough are the Russians in their negotiations? You've done it.
Very tough. They know what they want. They know that they are prepared to take real risks to go get it. I saw this in Ukraine when we were still talking about Crimea. I saw this in Syria when we were trying to figure out how to get the Iranians and the Russians out of Syria. They're real tough, Jay.
All right, we appreciate it. Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, Senior Counsel for Global Affairs at the ACLJ, thanks for being with us. And folks, let me just say, you heard today from leading experts in the world about these topics, and they're part of our team here at the ACLJ. So your support of the ACLJ makes that all happen. Again, a huge thank you. 2021 was a great year. We have some major initiatives for 2022 that we're going to be unfolding, and a lot of them will impact both domestically and internationally. So this is where we have an opportunity for some real growth. Again, your support of the ACLJ makes that happen at aclj.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.